it's up to you and me to shine a guiding light and lead the way. United by our cause, we have the power to pursue what we believe. We'll achieve the realization of our dreams.
Hello and welcome to New Horizons. I'm Vaughan Bennison. Thanks once again for your company. Today we bring you the second program in our series on the future of work from the Blind Citizens Australia Convention held in Hobart at the end of March. Here's the presenter of that session, Kelly Schultz.
When it comes to education, Megan, technology obviously plays a really big part in how education is delivered, but it also means that education has to keep up with teaching technology. So how do you see technology and the impact of technology and new technologies coming into the education, both as a tool but as a subject as well?
Firstly, I probably should take us back a little step just to talk about the nature of work and how it's changed at a national level, because I think this, we've talked about the technology and how it is impacting on people's individual work, but it's actually having a really significant effect on what's happening to our labour market. So there's a shift in the type of work that's happening. So we're seeing jobs disappear like manual unskilled labour. And there's a real increase in skilled and professional occupations. There's much wider markets, so no longer are we working in a localised community, we're working globally. Now, these things all have impact on how schooling happens. The other thing that's happening is that casualisation of the workforce that Kelly talked about. And so we're seeing this new term called the gig economy, or having a portfolio career, where people have to have more than one job. So they are working in, they might work part-time for somebody, but they might also have a job on the side where they've got an entrepreneurial business. The other key thing that's happening is that there's becoming more of a shortage of workers and not a shortage of jobs. So if you put all of those things together, Kelly, and you start to think about education and what that means for the technology component, because they're all a result of the impact of technology. So that has big implications for schooling and the things that we prioritise in schooling, but not just in schooling, in our further education as well. So we're very much aware that young people need to have a minimum of year 12 completion to get into the workforce, but all the research is saying that a Certificate 3 VET qualification is actually what people need for 93% of the jobs. Now, that's really changing what we need to have as outcomes for young people when they finish school, but also for people wanting to enter the workforce or to reskill so that they can move into new jobs, or as the technology takes over some of those more manual tasks, that they've actually got the skills to move into the more human tasks that require things like critical and creative thinking, problem solving and teamwork. So for schools, we're very much prioritising those things. So we now have courses around project management. We have big real-world problems that students have to solve, and they have to pitch those to industry. So they have to pitch their solutions to somebody. So there's a number of things that we're doing. The other things that are really important are that the nature of gaining work's really different. So once upon a time, you typed up your letter of application and put your resume together. Now you've got tools to help you do that, but you've also got tools analysing that information. So when you do your application, it potentially could go through a machine that picks out all the key words. Now that's got real implications for how we support young people to learn about how to apply for jobs, how to become ready for that workforce.
And that's a really interesting piece of technology, because if we think about the implications of resumes being reviewed electronically rather than by a human, for someone in the blindness, low vision community who's prepared their CV resume with using a screen reader, it may not have some of the fancy pictures, decorative items and things that might have traditionally stood out. I'm interested, it's a question without notice for Megan, what's the top tip for getting through the electronic resume system?
I'm going to take us back out a step again, and I want you to think about your health. And you spend an awful lot of time prioritising your health by going to doctors. People look after their well-being by joining sporting clubs and gyms and memberships. For many people, work, whether it's paid work or unpaid work, takes up a significant amount of our time. But we don't prioritise getting the help that we need to actually do this well. And there are people out there whose profession it is to help people get employment and to also help write applications, to help you be clear about what you want to say in your application and to help you get through those applicant tracking systems.
We've talked about reskilling and those skills about critical thinking or project management. People wanting to use the term diversity and inclusion because they like to put it on their website or hang their hats on this diversity and inclusion concept. But what are the potential benefits but also pitfalls of that in joining the employment market?
As Kelly just said, yeah, diversity inclusion does seem to be a topic out there, and this could be, as you mentioned, because it's the you know, quote unquote, the right thing to do, and businesses want to advertise themselves as, you know, morally and ethically good companies to work for. We heard Megan say there's a shortage of workers, and that's the truth. You're competing in a global economy now. There is a shortage. There's this concept that I think is more American. It's called talent. You know, we need to capture the best talent and all that sort of stuff. So I think businesses are trying to do everything they can to promote themselves as inclusive and to take a divergent workforce. There are a lot of studies out there, I guess, that do highlight the economic benefits of having a diverse workforce. I guess the pitfall is that it's just a numbers thing and they're just trying to put a number on the board. The opportunities are that there are businesses that are taking it very seriously. There are businesses around the world that are really re-looking at the things that they do. And I'll give you an example. At the moment, diversity and inclusion, there's a lot of emphasis on females, which is a fantastic thing. Having, you know, more females in leadership positions, and some of the things that meaningful things that companies are doing are they're really looking at their training. They're looking at, yes, we teach a course in negotiation skills, and they've looked at it critically and they've said, okay, well, this course was based on how males negotiate with other males. And they're looking at it again and saying, okay, well, let's refocus this. Let's make this more impactful for everyone. Or, you know, problem solving. You know, males might think differently than females. So those are some of the examples. But then I guess more making that more broad, the diversity and inclusion, I guess, that the inclusion does include, you know, disabled people, and looking at the way that the workplace is designed for disabled people and how it can be more inclusive. So I guess, in summary, the pitfall or the threat is that it's just a statistic that someone's trying to hit. But the benefits are that there are lots of corporations out there who do see the benefits in terms of economic and social benefits and are really moving towards including all types of people, including disabled people, in the workplace.
Suman, does IRA have a diversity and inclusion policy?
We don't talk inclusion, we do inclusion. couple of points there. So 90% of the companies, at least in the United States that I know, which I think is globally true as well, are small businesses, right? When we look at any of the conventions, majority of the companies who are coming forward are big giant corporations. We don't have to name them, but you can guess who they are. So which is great, which is awesome, and that's what, you know, Roko was also touching on, you know, how they have these individual programs to kind of do the training and come forward. But then imagine, and they are hitting their numbers. That's great, but it's not enough. It's not enough that we are addressing a large community where we are opening up the opportunities for everybody and we are doing something to, you know, fulfill their passion, right? As a student myself, I want to do several different things. My parents forced me to do engineering, which I did. It's a it's not a bad thing. But then, you know, I followed my passion, which is I did my MBA, and then, you know, I started something to do something different. So I guess my point in here is we should be going beyond the 10% corporations who are thinking about or having those programs, because that will still only limit how many number of people who are blind or low vision can hire them. So what are the programs that we can collectively together that will address that 90% of the opportunity that we are not talking about today? And that's what I want to talk about. I don't want to talk about the 10% corporation people, because they're already doing their best in bringing, you know, and connecting and training. So, you know, one of the things that we have is called like the job seeker platform, right? So there are around 400 students around in the United States that use Ivra every day on the basis for enhancing their education. But beyond that, we also have something called job seeker. So one of the interesting findings that we had was majority of the people who are using Ivra for seeking jobs is spending their time looking for jobs that are not these 10% of those corporations, which is pretty interesting, yeah? So they are going out to seek websites which may be inaccessible because these are small businesses. They may not have investment to make, you know, to make sure. They may not know what the hell is accessibility for what it's worth. So that's pretty cool. And we are also finding people who are shifting their career because, you know, that's what they want to do. So 65% of the entire set of folks who went through our program actually changed their jobs. And 40% of that 65% landed on a job for the first time ever. So I guess my point in here is I think we should be pushing forward in advocating for employment, advocating for jobs, advocating for training and skills that are needed for people who are blind beyond that 10% market that we are currently focused on. And we got to tap into that 90% small businesses who are employing people, and that's when we will solve that 70% unemployment problem.
I'm going to go straight to Megan on the topic of small business, and I know you have a great story on your own small business. I'm interested in that topic both from your perspective but also in a working for the government and the topic of quotas and diversity and inclusion.
I'll start with the simple one, I guess. I actually have a portfolio career, so as well as doing my day job, I have an adult child with a significant disability. He didn't meet the requirements for the NDIS to get support into the supported work and training programs that were in existence. And that happened, I think, in year 11 for him. So when he was in year 12, I said, OK, let's find something that he can do. And I invented a new gourmet food product, which is based on the byproducts of a gin, a slow gin that's been made here in Tasmania. And we've turned that into a gourmet food paste. Now, the reason that's important is that my son can actually push a trolley. So all through years 11 and 12... His work-based learning was about learning to push a trolley and carry a little bag so that he could take money from people and could distribute his gourmet food product. So now he's an adult and his business is to go and deliver this product to the distributors, and when it's Easter time and Christmas time, he does local deliveries to businesses that want to support inclusion. But I do work in the part of the education department called support and development, and we have an inclusion team within support and development which supports all levels of inclusion and types of inclusion across the education department, and continually looking at the needs. So we address needs in the early years with young people before they even start school. We have the visually impaired, hearing impaired. We have people supporting people with all forms of disability. But we also have what's called individual learning plans. And many students in Tasmania are on individual learning plans to ensure that the curriculum's being delivered in a way that actually meets their needs and is measuring their milestones and their improvements, rather than just being an Australian curriculum and everybody's got to meet the same milestone at the same time. And technology is a really important part of that, and having accessible technology to be able to do that.
And that ends this week's program. If you'd like to get in touch with BCA, the telephone number is 1-800-033-660, 1-800-033-660. If you'd like to email, bca@bca.org.au is the address, and of course the website is www.bca.org.au. I'm Vaughan Bennison. I'll be back again next week. Do take care.
We'll achieve the realization of our dreams, of our dreams.